propone hacer lo hace como que hay un can you please use your mic?
Yes, I'm very well, thank you. Good morning to all the members of Parliament. My name is Roazi Kubukedi. In the African culture, we're enculturated to be modest about our accomplishments. So this is the one time where I get an opportunity to put modesty aside and state my accomplishments for what they are without overly embellishing. Perhaps should I just say without embellishing. I will start with my youth very briefly, and then I will move on from there to my very short time in exile, and then my time abroad working with communities abroad, and then I will bring it back home to when I return to the country and continue to work to advance our communities, and also until I am currently in private practice. In my youth, I was inspired by my father and his friends who were active in the underground resisting the Bantustan system. I came of age during the time when the Transkei was declared an independent state. My father and some of his colleagues were resisting that. Of course, I didn't know at the time what was happening, because the schools, we were organized to participate in drills and celebrations of the independence. But during that time, my father was detained several times. It was only around 1977, after the death of Steve Biko, when my father had gone to the funeral and came back home and was detained for a lengthy period. And that's when I then came to realize what was happening in the country. And, the manner in which he was so defiant, even under that kind of harassment, it just really left an indelible mark in my young memory. That is what really has made me the person I am, living under that constant harassment for his activities. And then sometime in 1982, when I was in high school, my brother was left the country with the ANC underground to join Umkhonto we Sizwe. The harassment by South African police increased. We were constantly being woken up in the middle of the night. And I guess I can say that I basically became part of the struggle by default, in a sense, because of the manner in which I was exposed to the constant harassment. I became an activist in my own right as a student. And I remember that I was in one of the schools, Bantingville High School, outside of Mbilane, which was during that time, one of the elite sort of schools in the Transkei. But we were so active such that that school really was considered a school for the ANC underground. That's how Matanzima used to characterize it, such that we actually became, when we got expelled, we became banned from other schools in the Transkei. Until I managed to find a school in a remote rural area, in a school called Nyangiliza, to finish my matric at a very disadvantaged school. And even under that hardship, I became the only matriculation exemption in that school for that year, which was the year 1984. And then in 1985, I enrolled for a law degree at UNITRA, the now Walter Sisulu University. Of course, I couldn't finish that year at school because of the of our activism. And by the time Matanzi McGowan was very brutal, such that after the death of one of my colleagues, Batan Londondo. Perhaps I should just try and just summarize my later working years. I then became exiled, and I ended up, after having been part of Umkhonto we Sizwe, during the time when it was very clear that South Africa was changing and becoming a democratic country, the talks were in an advanced stage. The liberation movements found us schools to go to in order to learn. I ended up in the United States, where I actually became very active working with underprivileged communities. My work there earned me awards such as from the city of San Francisco and the San Francisco State University for my involvement with communities. It's part of the package that I've given to the members with my CV. And then I returned to the country and completed my law degree, started my law degree with Rhodes University and completed it with UNISA in correspondence study, and that was when I was in the United States. Because I went back and I worked with an organization, an NGO called Project Underground, which was involved with communities that are impacted by oil and mining extraction. And what we did was to investigate the impacts of oil and mining extraction on land-based livelihoods of communities, indigenous communities. We worked with communities in Nigeria, worked with communities in Peru, with Native American communities in the Shoshone areas. The kind of mining that we were targeting is gold mining using cyanide leach mining, which ends up having tailings dams.
Thank you. Please, can you confirm your disclosure and your passionate? Is there anything further that you would want us to know?
There is nothing that I can think of. I think with my disclosure, I was as forthright as could be possible.
In 2016, there was a court judgment of the Constitutional Court in the matter of the EFF versus the Speaker of the National Assembly and the GA versus the Speaker of the National Assembly and others. It had a fundamental impact on the institution of the TP. Can you explain to us what was the impact of that judgment?
Yes, indeed. That is the judgment that is known as the Ganja judgment. During that time, there was contestation over the whether the findings and the remedial actions of the public protector are binding. It was a contested territory. And I think the court, in delivering its judgment, determined that the remedial actions of the public protector are binding unless set aside by a court of law on review. The impact of that judgment is just that, in fact, in my own assessment, is what has also led to most of the review applications, because now people realize that the only way that any finding of maladministration against them, any negative finding of against them, can only be cleared from their record is by taking those findings on review in order to have them set aside. So that is my understanding of the judgment. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Advocate Members. Advocate Friedenbach, Honorable Kola, Honorable Kole, Advocate Shah Mohammed, Honorable Jay, Honorable Schwartz, Honorable Newport Graham. Honorable Mukin, in that order.
what your understanding is of the concept, the rule of law.
I see.
And could you tell me, please, what your understanding is of the concept of the due process?
Indeed. The concept of the rule of law is one of the most fundamental precepts of our Constitution, the founding values of our Constitution, where it says in Section 1C that our Constitution is the supreme law of the land, and it is based, our country is based on the rule of law. It is a concept that has also found the basis for review applications, specifically insofar as the public protector is concerned. I can think of the case of where the parties relied on an alternative reliance on the rule of law. I think it's the AFSA case, the CS matter, where alternatively the review was set up on the grounds of rule of law, which is a quite an all-encompassing ground.
Terribly sorry, I don't mean to interrupt you, but our time is limited. Yeah. And so what I need to understand from you is, what is the rule of law?
The rule of law is that we are a country where the supremacy of the Constitution reigns supreme. Any conduct that is against the Constitution, that runs contrary to the Constitution, is unlawful.
Thank you. Then similarly, what is due process?
Due process is a principle that emerges from before our constitutional democracy, from the founding principle of fundamental justice, that the other side should be heard, outram partem. So due process is about observing the rights of any side in an administrative process or a legal process.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Bettenbach. Honorable Mona.
Thanks, Chair. Mona was good class.
Mona.
You have presented a background of most disadvantaged person. I just want to check, what role do you think the Office of the Public Protector must play in ensuring that the socio-economic lives of those downtrodden people are improved?
In my understanding and in my aspirations for the Office of the Public Protector, the first thing is universal access. The ability of even the most disadvantaged, those without access to the internet, those without access to education, to be able to go and complain to the Office of the Public Protector. So accessibility is key. And I actually just learned from annual report of the Public Protector, where it says one of the things they would like to do to accomplish universal access was to enter into a memorandum of understanding with the Justice Department, where they could be offices of the Public Protector located within the Magistrates Court. So I come here with an avowed rural bias, which is one of the reasons why when I actually practiced, I decided to go back to the Eastern Cape. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. appreciate it.